What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome back to another episode of the Yap Sesh podcast. And today we're doing a special episode, a re-yap, if you will, of Skeleton Crew episodes 3 and 4. Listen, people, we dropped the ball a little bit because we did say that we were going to record an episode for every episode, and then we were all really busy.
Life happened.
Yeah, a lot of life happened.
We had finals and papers due, and I tabled at a convention because I sell stuff. I think I talked about that last time for the first time ever, which was really fun, but I had a lot of prep work to do. So we're back with a re-yap of episode 3 and 4. I'm Brooke, if you're new here, and I'm with my co-host, Sawyer, and our guest co-host, Megs, Megalorian,
who is my
number one Skeleton Crew stan.
I love this show so much, and it just gets better every week, and I am so glad.
I'm having a lot of fun, too. I'm really excited to talk about these next episodes. I'm also sick, if you can't tell from my voice. So bear with me. I'm not going to cough into the microphone, though. I'm going to try my hardest not to. Sawyer, do we have any housekeeping stuff to talk about?
I don't think so, just because we're on a delay with the posting and we, again, dropped the ball. But you know what? It's okay. We'll be back regularly scheduled programming next week for episode 5. And for now, you can sit back and relax and enjoy this re-yap, which we're all very excited to do.
Yeah. And I guess just a reminder that we have a Discord if you'd like to join, and a Patreon. You can join our Patreon for just $1 and you'll get access to our Discord server, where hopefully in the new year we're going to be doing some watch alongs and game nights and fun things. And we'll have like discussion channels in there if you want to talk about stuff in the episode or like give us suggestions for things you want to see us talk about, because we're always looking at like new themes for episodes and guests to have on. But yeah, I think we're ready to talk about the Skeleton Crew.
Episode 3, very interesting as an astrogation problem, directed by David Lowry.
What a title.
I'm not confused, but I was very confused of the episode title when I looked at it before I watched the episode. I was like, what does that mean?
It's a lot of words.
It's a lot of words that an astrogation? Is that a real word or is that a Star Wars?
I'm looking
word?
It up.
Yeah, I don't know, but I like the titles. I do really enjoy the episode titles of this show. It really fits well with the tone of the show.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, astrogation, in relation to Star Wars, was the science of safely and reliably traversing space in a starship. But in like regular English, not in Star Wars universe, it's just navigation in outer space.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Okay, so directed by David Lowry, written by Christopher Ford and John Watts, and the Disney Plus synopsis is a mysterious stranger offers to help our heroes.
Who could this mysterious stranger be? So let's, I guess, start with some non-spoiler thoughts before we get into some spoiler territory. And we can talk about, I guess, non-spoiler thoughts for episode 3 and 4, if we want to, like, combine them. And then we'll get into all the details and nitty-gritty of it.
I like that the mystery is just continuously, while we're finding out more information, it's continuously growing. Like, there's still more question marks that are popping up as we're getting more answers, which I love. That's, like, my favorite kind of mystery in the whole world is, like, oh, you think you know what's happening, and then you don't know what's going on. And it's so good, and I feel like Skeleton Crew, like, even with these two episodes, really has done a good job of being like, okay, you have a good grasp of what's happening. No, you don't. Something's going to throw a wrench in it. And I really like that a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very different from the way that the Acolyte handled mystery, which I think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. With the Acolyte, there were a lot of moments that were spoon-fed to us, and you had to, like, because the reveal of the Acolyte was you actually don't know what the mystery is. Nobody knows what the mystery is, and that was the whole point. So it's very different from that, and like you said, Megs, like, you know, as we go forward, the mystery just continues to grow and grow, and we have no idea what's going on, and the kids have no idea what's going on. And we're still halfway through the show, really like, huh? What's going to happen? Anything could happen at this point.
Yeah. I also like that we're finding out, like, sometimes shows will do that thing where they let the audience in on more than what the characters know, and I kind of like that they're not doing that with this. I like that we're in the same boat as the kids, where we only know what they know, and I think that that's so much more fun, because then our reactions are the same as theirs, and I think it makes the watch experience so much better, because you're like, oh my god, wait, we're having the same feelings right now that these kids are having.
It's yeah, fun. I really like that, and like, I guess giving us a little bit more about Jod in these couple episodes that, like, the kids aren't seeing, but it's nothing that, like, we're not seeing, like, him with, like, a different agenda. Like, I think it's kind of obvious, like, oh, a pirate who was imprisoned is now suddenly, like, there's a planet that has a lot of treasure on it. Let me see if I can get these kids home, and then maybe they'll reward me. Like, it's not that much of a mystery, even from episode one, when they were like, oh, Captain Silvo, and then they didn't do anything to hide Jude Law's voice. I was like, I like that's not the mystery, because I feel like Star Wars and Marvel and like a lot of these IPs, they rely so much on like, who is this mysterious figure? And I think even the Acolyte did it well, where we kind of all figured by like episode three or four that Chimaer, or that the stranger was Chimaer, and then we got the reveal, and it was like not this huge shock value, because that was like not the point of the story, which I think is similar in Skeleton Crew. Like, the point of the story is not like, oh, who is this mysterious guy? It's like, we kind of know who he is. We don't know his whole backstory about, because we saw him use the Force in episode two, question mark. But he's pretty like straightforward with who he is.
I also like that he's just as confused as the kids are. I think that it's really nice that they're all on the same playing field, so it doesn't feel like he's one-upping them in any way. Even though he's scheming and he has his own agenda, he needs those kids as much as they need him. Like, it's it's not like a follow me, let's go on an adventure, I'm an adult. Like, that's not what's happening, and I think that's a really neat dynamic.
Yes. Yeah. I think
go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think it kind of aids into, like we've said before, like that feeling of the 80s coming of age movie, where it really centers on the kids, and while the adults are there to like aid the story, they're not there to tell the kids what to do. They're there to like help push the kids further, and it's focused on them, like, which I love. I think that that's so fun that they are the focus, and it's not the adults telling them what to do. The adults are there to just kind of push them forward.
Yeah, and they're not, the kids aren't, as far as the interactions we've seen with the adults, they're not being dismissed by the grown-ups around the adults around them, especially Jod. Like, I was like, I think he is going to be kind of a dick and then betray them at the end. But in these last couple episodes, we've seen, like, he does need them as much as they need him. And I think he's not stupid. You know, like, I don't know if we're starting to see him, like, care about these kids, or if it's still kind of like a, I don't know. I think we'll talk about episode four, but, like, there's a respect there, especially where Fern was like, I'm the captain, and you work for us. And he's like, all right, okay. You know, like, there was not a lot of pushback. He's just like, I'm just gonna let this girl do whatever. But I guess episode three is really, we were introduced to this mysterious figure in the end of episode two, which was Jude Law's character. And then we find out in this episode who he is and a little more about him. So he said his name is Jod Nanawood.
What a name.
And I'm like, he must have come up with that on the spot. Kind of like Han Solo.
Yeah, it feels very like, I don't know what I want my name to be, so I'm gonna say things, and it's just
like random sounds that came out and somebody wrote it down.
Yep.
It's so funny. But yeah, so we're introduced to him, and they break themselves out of the brig, or the little jail that's on that starship. Nope, not a starship. What's it called?
Starport.
Starport. Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
and
I got you.
Then we see a little bit of a chaotic escape plan or a little escape adventure that they go yes. on.
Because they need to go back for SM-33. And may I just say, I have never full belly laughed at Star Wars the way that I did when Jod goes back and he turns on all of those droids. That was so funny. I understand the memery of the battle droid being like, "Did we win?" Like, okay, but
oh, that, I laughed so hard.
That wasn't what was that wasn't the funniest one to me. For whatever reason, the droid that was like, "I must save the prince," that I lost it. I was like, "What is going on?"
I just love the idea that like people keep ditching their droids on this port. Like, they just have them all, and they're like, yeah, we'll just keep them for a rainy day, I guess. Like, what's the point?
Yeah. The did we win really got me, because it was just so fat. Did we win? And then we just back up. It was so good. I'm such a sucker for, like, stupid jokes like that. When I was in Disney, I rode Star Tours, there was some guy, one of the cast members, who was like giving us the whole spiel about, like, you know, pull on the yellow thing, whatever. He made some sort of Clone Wars joke, I think. And me and my friend were in the front, and I went, "Roger, Roger," and laughed at that. And then I was chosen as the rebel spy.
And you said,
and I was like, "Thank you, God." Because I know it's the cat. I have one of my best friends did the Disney College program. And she worked at Star Tours, and it's like the cast member picks the rebel spy. And so I was like, "Thank you, man." Like, I was so happy.
We're best friends.
I wish that you could see the same cast member when you leave, because I would have been like, "Thanks." But it was so good. Anyway, moving on. That Jod goes back to get SM-33, and we're introduced to a guy that I think used to be a part of his crew, because he knew him. And was like, "Oh, how'd you get out? Blah, blah, blah." That guy, fun fact, was played by or voiced by Alfred Molina. Spider-Man fame. Yeah. Of Spider-Man and Indiana Jones fame.
Okay, Doc Ock.
That was his first film role. Did you guys know that? That was his first ever film
Raiders?
Role.
Indiana Jones.
Yes. Really? Wow. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I found that out recently because people were talking about it again with the game coming out and that whole like opening sequence. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was him until I went back and watched Raiders. Like,
what a guy.
Not long ago. Yeah, I was like, "Oh my god, that's Doc Ock." yeah, that was him. Always forget that he's actually a British man.
Dude, every time I see an interview with him, I'm like, "Whoa, wait."
Yeah. I just think of, "Hello, Peter." And it's like, it is a very British American accent. Like, the over pronunciation, but like... Whatever.
It's just, it sounds like Doc Ock. Like, that's just how I hear Doc Ock now. Like, especially when they did, spoilers if you haven't seen the most recent Spider-Man movie, it came out like 3 years ago, so you should have watched it by now. But when he popped up in there, I remember just being like, "Oh my god," because you could just hear his voice, and you're like, "I know that guy."
It was so good. I loved. That was my favorite part. I was like, I don't care about anybody else, but Doc Ock.
No, literally, I love Doc Ock.
Yeah. But anyway, and then he is kind of a dick to Jod and was like, "I'm gonna tell on you," basically. And then that's how shit goes awry, and they have to escape quicker and not as stealthy as they had planned.
Unfortunate. Yes.
And then they get stuck on the tow line, mm-hmm. or the gas line.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was a good bit.
What do? They just enter hyperspace while attached to the gas line, right?
Literally, yeah. Yeah. And then there was so much, like, the energy, I guess, it made that whole gas line, like, fuck up their whole shit. I loved, though, that Brutus, the, like, werewolf-looking guy, just kind of stood there as, like, everything was crashing around him. And I'm like, honestly, I would kind of probably do the same.
I feel like at that point, you're like,
Yeah, if I die, I die.
I wonder, though, are we going to see them again?
I feel like they have to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's going to be a way that they are, like, tracking the ship, or, like, they run into each other.
I feel like they kept Jod around for a reason, and mm-hmm. like instead of just like, you know, pirates are pirates, like they could have just killed him and been like, bye. I think they're probably either following them or looking for Jod, and if they're following them, they're gonna try to get to the treasure because they probably mm-hmm. heard the kids talking about it, and like someone overheard it. Like there's gonna be something where they like are like, okay, this is our chance to uh-huh. make even on that score, and then
mm-hmm.
pop up.
Yeah, I also feel like they're going kind of like the Jack Sparrow route, where it's like this renowned pirate loses everything and then he has to try to like reclaim it all. So I can see him kind of like using this treasure that he's find to like rebuild his, you know, ship with his crew and stuff, and like kind of win them back and establish like leadership over them again. So I feel like we have not seen, there was like too much of them in the promos for the show to only see them in like the couple of first episodes. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I would agree. I think they're gonna come back.
Yeah. Yeah, so they escape finally with SM-33, and they Jod says he knows a friend. Did anybody get like weird? So anyway, they go to this moon and they run into there, they meet this owl cat lady. Yes. I don't know. I love her.
Me too. I love that
like design for character.
Mm-hmm.
I love new creatures in Star Wars. That's always my favorite thing. New creatures and species. Like, give me all of them. I want more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her name is Kim. It's K-H-apostrophe-Y-M-M. Pardon me, I'm
of
coughing.
Of course it is.
Who is a map
can't
expert.
Have normal spelling.
I was gonna say, did anybody else get, like, some weird sexual tension?
I saw someone
post about that after I watched it the first time, and then I rewatched it and I was like, there's something weird going on here.
I did not get that, and I need to rewatch it like immediately.
Oh no.
It reminded me so much of like Maz Kanata and Chewie.
Okay.
Like the see, oh, you know, like it's not reciprocated, but it's kind okay. of like there was some sort of like something there.
Maybe it's cannot... just the way she says Crimson Jack.
Yeah, maybe.
Literally, my first thought when we were going to like find her was that we were going to find Maz. I was like, oh, no way, we're about to go talk to Maz Kanata well, right now.
And the voice actor like reminded me so much of Maz Kanata.
Yeah.
Very similar, mm-hmm. like, inflections and whatever as Lupita Nyong'o. Anyway. They're looking for Ad-Adin on this place.
Yes.
And love. Some coordinates. Yeah, I think this is the first time that we hear Crimson Jack. Like, I want to know what that's about.
I wonder if we're going to get, like, some big reveal where all the names, like... first of all, how many more names is he going to acquire before we the kids eventually find out that he's this big hotshot pirate?
Yeah, because we all know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. I know that Crimson Jack is like a canon character. Not a canon character, a character from Legends, I think.
Comics or something. Comics,
it was like one of the first comics, I think. Oh gosh, I had it bookmarked at one point. He was a pirate. Like, a part of a gang of pirates out in the Outer Rim, and he was in one of the early comics. Like, I don't even know how long ago. Hold on. I'm looking. First appearance in the first issue of the comic book miniseries Star Wars Halcyon Legacy.
Oh, okay. So not totally
new. Okay, so not totally new. And then he was also he was in Legends in the original Marvel Star Wars comic.
Yeah, okay.
Published in 1977. So, definitely a deep, deep cut that appeared later again.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if that's like a title that gets like passed. Because obviously, I read the Halcyon legacy comics, but they go through like a whole, you know, couple hundred years of time back from like the High Republic to the sequels, I think. So I don't know if they're going to retcon that in a way that it makes sense that that would actually be Jod, or if it's some sort of like title
that's been passed
that
along.
Is like passed along.
Yeah. Or it could be like a famed pirate that pirates in general, they use that name when they're trying to disguise themselves or keep their identity secret.
Yeah, like one of those ones that gets brought up again and again.
But whatever the case, there's a tumultuous relationship between Kim and Crimson Jack. And she's already called the New Republic to report him by the time that they arrive. And I thought this was a little strange because she does help them. She does.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's probably because the kids were there and she was concerned about the kids. But she does go out of their way of her way to like try and help them until the authorities arrive.
Yeah, I feel like it was half that and then half just like stalling for time.
Yeah. You
know, for that one for them to get there, but
couldn't she have stalled for time in a way that was unhelpful?
That is true. That is a good point. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe I think because she saw him and then realized that he was with a bunch of kids.
And thought, oh man, maybe I'll help them get back.
Yeah.
Yes.
So she did some stuff and got some information and was able to find the like coordinates of what we think is At-Aden, or what she thinks is At-Aden. But I remember there being some sort of like star chart that looked like there were many planets in that system.
Yes.
In addition to At-Aden, which moving on to episode 4, when we get there, we know that that is true and that there are more, there's more than one planet next to near At-Aden. Yeah, I think it's really interesting too that I'm really interested in the mystery of At-Aden and like the history of like, why is it hidden? Why did whoever was on the planet hide it? What does this like great work have to do with everything? I'm very intrigued. That's like the mystery that I am very interested in more than anything.
Me too. I have a theory that I'll talk about when we get to episode 4 because I think that it ties in. But I think
that's a crazy theory. But we'll get
excited.
I mean, is there anything else that we missed in episode 3 that we wanted to touch on?
I don't think so. It's very much giving Treasure Planet again of like the star charts and stuff. Like the way that they look, I'm like, ooh, we're going.
Similar like aesthetics and vibes, like, but that's kind of all like that like 80s, 90s like vibe, which I love. But moving on to episode 4, because I feel like I have a lot more to say about this episode than episode 3. This episode is called Can't Say Remember No At-Aden. my terrible SM33 impression. This one is directed by the Daniels, who are the directors of Oscar Best Picture, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is one of my favorite movies I've seen in recent years. So I was really excited when they announced that they would be directing an episode of this show. Because I think that they're style works really well with Star Wars, and I
agree.
After watching this episode, that's my theory was proven. And this was also written by Christopher Ford and John Watts. There's only 2 episodes that they didn't write, which I think are the next 2 coming up next week and the week after. But the synopsis of this episode is our heroes face a surprise in a familiar setting.
I had to watch this episode twice because I actually was too tired and I fell asleep the first time. Not because I was bored, I was just eepy. But
I get it.
I didn't, the first time I watched it, I didn't realize the similarities between this world and which we at first think is At-Aden and the planet they actually end up on. And So watching it back, I was like, oh my gosh, wait, these are the places, but it's like a parallel. It's a mirror. But what's interesting is that we first do see houses and like civilization. They see it, and then Neil goes, oh, look, we're home. I see houses. And then the ship goes into autopilot and takes them far away from suburbia.
Interesting. I didn't catch that part, I don't think, about the autopilot.
Yeah. So, like, when they enter the planet, they see the houses, and Neil's like, oh my god, blah! And then the autopilot kicks in, and then SN-33 is like, I'll land it, don't worry. And that's how they end up in wherever the heck they end up.
I didn't pay enough attention. Did they land like in the same location that the ship would have taken off from on Ad-Aden?
I don't think so.
It did look similar. They were kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, like, so we find out later in the episode that this is not Ad-Aden, it's at Akron. Which is a sister planet, which the star chart that we see before, I don't know if it was labeled or not, but it was like, oh, there's more planets, and here is one of them. But it's very, like, this whole show, too, obviously, because even, like, Stranger Things also is, it like, an homage to the Goonies and all of those 80s things, but it's, like, the sister planet, or it very was, like, upside down vibes of like everything is the same but very different and like scarier.
Yeah, at first I was like, are they on Ad-Aten but on the other side of it? That was my first.
That's what I was wondering.
Like a mirror or something.
But in any case, here they are, and they're immediately confronted with a war that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And King No Head.
And King No Head, yes.
Yeah, I'm like,
I got a good giggle.
I'm really interested in like the history of all of these planets. Like, I think that's I'm very intrigued. They learn that they're actually at Akron. And there is a long standing war between these two groups of soldiers who identify as either the Troiks or the Hattons. And they are introduced to the Troiks first. Mm-hmm. I think, is that the ones that the kids run into?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The kids are introduced to these Troiks, and they're kids. They're like kid soldiers, which I thought was very interesting because there's a continuing dialogue in the Star Wars fandom about, you know, are the Jedi wrong for having child soldiers in the Clone Wars, etc., etc. And we're confronted with it, like, here are children who are soldiers on this planet.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's the thing that I really liked about this episode is the kids have obviously grown up in a place where it's very peaceful. They didn't know that there was a war. They've been sheltered from all this stuff their entire life. And then they end up on a planet that looks exactly like theirs. Everything should be the same, but things are destroyed. They come across people who are fighting, and like Neil's first response is, well, just don't. Like, just be peaceful. And like,
baby.
What? And I loved that because when you ask kids about like those hard topics like that, they immediately are like, this is how you fix it. Like, they make it so simple. Mm-hmm. And I love that, like, in their head, they're like, yeah, this is all you have to do to fix it. Like, it's not hard. And it's just, it was cool to see them learn about this thing that they had never experienced with other kids. And have that kind of like, oh, like, it's not that simple, and maybe we would have to figure out another way to fix this. And I just really like that. It was a good foil for them, I think, to learn more about other places, and then maybe if they find out about what happened in the universe that they weren't aware of, they'll have more like empathy towards it in a way, because they have now experienced it on what would have been kind of their planet. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool.
It was also the first time that we've seen these kids be confronted with danger and really have it kind of sober them up to reality. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen, especially Fern in this episode, we see for the past three episodes, she's been tough. She's been the leader. She's been, you know, taking charge of every situation. And in this episode, she's really scared and she's really brought back to humanity and she just wants to go home. And I thought that this was portrayed beautifully through methods in which we've already discussed, in which, you know, the Troiks, they're like, oh, we see children as adults. And that's how they've been treated since they left Ad-Aten. But we see it in a very different light in this episode.
Yeah.
Definitely. I love the, I have to shout out to when they leave the ship and they tell Zod to stay on the ship. And they're like, SM-33, like, make sure he doesn't leave the ship. And SM-33 is like initiating babysitter protocol. And I just, the like the voice of 33 just being like, come here, baby. God.
Was so funny.
It's so good.
It was so perfect. It was like, it was not what I expected to hear come out of his mouth at all, but I was so here for it. I was like, yeah, this is...
The dialogue in the show, is it just doesn't miss. It's so spot funny. On. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny.
It's so good. I love it so much.
Yeah, I think that's like one of my favorite bits in Star Wars ever. Like, I have to think about, like, what are the funniest moments in Star Wars? That is probably up there with the Bad Batches. Is there an echo in here? Yes. That practice every time.
I'm Echo.
Hi, Echo. It's so dumb, and I love it. I love the, like, stupid humor, because I think that is, like, the heart of Star Wars is, like, it's for kids. So, the, like, slapstick, the, like, you know, hitting your head on the ceiling, whatever, like, that, Jar Jar Binks, like, that is the kind of funny that maybe some adults don't think is funny, but it's, like, you have to remember that this is targeted at families who may have kids who are going to think that that is, like, the funniest thing they've ever heard.
Absolutely.
Including myself. It was. And I'm here to say that it was.
Oh, man. I also, like, right after that, when he takes all of the credits out of Wim's bag, immediately, he's not even, like, trying to figure out how to get out of here. He's immediately like, okay, let me go find more money.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, I think, yeah, I love Jod. I love him.
He's so funny. Not
just because it's Jude Law. I just think, like, he's such an interesting character. Who you'd think he's like, oh, you know, it's very different from the normal reluctant adoptive dad where, like, they're, at least so far that we've seen, it's like, I have to protect this child. It is, like, Jod and Din Djarin are very similar, where it's like, I think I'm going to go into this protecting this child, and it's actually the kids that are protecting me. And I have to listen to what these kids tell me. So... And I love it. I just think it's great that Jod is kind of just like, all right, sure. He's yes-anding all the kids. And I think that's great.
He really is. He just kind of goes along with everything, and it's perfect.
Yes. But yeah, so we are introduced to these Troiks, and they are brought back to their, like, home base of where all of their soldiers are. And they're introduced to the general whose daughter's name is Haina. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page because I'm bad at character names. So there's this general that's, like, in charge of this whole side of this whole army of Troiks. And he has a daughter named Haina who befriends the kids, especially Neil, which I think is so sweet. Yeah. I love Neil in this episode.
He's so good. Oh, I cry whenever I think about it. I'm like, you're my little baby, and I just want to keep you safe.
When he gives his food to the kids, oh my god.
I literally wanted to die. That was just the most precious. Oh my gosh. I think that's the thing that I, like, took away from this episode was I grew up very, very similar to Neil, of like that, like, kind of quiet, kind of like scared of everything, but also like really wanted to like be nice to everyone and like tried my hardest to like do everything right. And I love that we got to see more of that in the context outside of his friends, of mm-hmm. just like him immediately seeing someone that needed help and being like, do you guys need this? I can give you this. And then that scene later in the episode where Hannah's like, your kindness is not a weakness, it's like it's your greatest strength. I love that. And I'm so glad that they included that, because I think that we get into that mindset of like, oh, I have to be strong to be strong, you know, like I have to be like kind of aggressive and angry. And it's like, that's not always the strongest thing that you can be. Like sometimes you need to be a little bit more subdued and a little bit more kind to be able to be strong. And I love that so much. And I'm so glad that they included that. It was precious and perfect. And I was like, my baby.
Yeah, I think Neil displays a lot of like autistic traits that I could like kind of see in myself and what I've seen in others, especially like the black and white thinking of like, well, just stop fighting, you know, and like, it's not that he doesn't understand the complexities of it, but he's like, down in his heart, he's like, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we hurting each other when we could just work together? Yeah. Like, he's like, I understand. I think to a point he understands, you know, why there's fighting going on, but he's like, it doesn't have to be this way, which I think is really sweet. But it's also like very reminiscent of some like autistic traits and like the sense of justice of like, well, I have food, but these little kids don't have food, so I'm going to give them so they have food because I'd rather them than me. And I don't know. I just really, I resonated with that part of it.
I agree. I'm a little guy. I just want to put him in my pocket and keep saving him for later, you know? He can just stay right there, stay safe in my little spot. Nothing bad will ever happen to him, ever.
I mean, you can do that with your pop. Technically.
I don't have a pocket big enough, but I'll figure it out.
I kind of want the black series of Neil, because I feel like he's my emotional support action figure. Because I have a tiny Din Djarin that I take with me everywhere. It's either in my backpack or in my bag. And I feel like I could use a Neil. Star Wars, if you're Swagman, if you're listening to this, if you want to send Yapsesh some Black Series figures,
he's so cute. His little overalls.
I know. That's one of my favorite things from this whole thing, is how many like Disney bounds and like including Meg's of Neil that I've seen, like with the little, everyone's buying red overalls and wearing like a little yellow shirt, and it's
so precious. At the preview, I like dressed up, right? And no one else was, a lot of people were dressed up as like Star Wars, but no one was really dressed up Skeleton Crew, which totally made sense. New media, like all the things. And I had a girl come up to me after that goes, your outfit makes so much more sense. She was like, I couldn't figure out what you were bounding as, and I was thinking maybe Hera, but it wasn't green, so I didn't know. And then she was like, God, this makes so much more sense now. And I was like, yeah.
That's Neil.
Little guy.
Angel. So anyway, while the kids are with the Troix, Jod finds himself approached quite aggressively by the other side, which is the Hattons. And I really love, I was like, new reaction meme just dropped, where they're like, hands up, and he's like, all right, you know what, just shoot me. And I'm like, I've saved it to my phone already. I'm like, I'm gonna use, it's like me after any minor inconvenience, you know what, just shoot me. I thought that was a really funny moment. And also, I didn't even say, so shameless plug, if you know who Star Wars Lawyer is, our friend Chris, his YouTube channel, I've been doing reactions to the Skeleton Crew episodes. And he has made a Jod simp counter, or Jude's Law simp counter, specifically for me. And at this point, I didn't even, he gets down on his knees, okay, in this part of the episode. I didn't even say anything. And Chris was like, Brooke? And I was like, what? And he's like, I know you. And I'm like, he did get on his knees, okay? What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with that?
Last time the sim counter was at 2, so where are we at now?
Oh, you know what? It's at 4 or 5. Okay. Because we didn't even talk about, I think it was at episode 3, he gets his new fit. Like, he finds... Was it episode 3 or 4? No, it was 3. He, like, Jod, like, scrounges up an outfit on the ship because he's wearing, like, rags, essentially. And I just think this is, you know, not just Star Wars. I think every man looks hotter in a flowy shirt, high-waisted pants, and a long jacket.
That's so real, actually.
it's like a flowy, low-cut V-neck shirt. That's so slutty, and he looks like a pirate. It's great.
Like fair. Pirate Mr. fair Darcy. fair. Yes. But anyway, yes, he is approached by the Hattons, and we don't actually see what happens there until much later in the episode, because we spend most of the time with the kids, because that's what the show is about, of course. Mm-hmm. But it turns out he cut a deal with them. With those credits.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. The kids train a little bit with the Troiks. They learn how to use, like, the weapons and things, because the Troiks are like, no, you have to go into battle. Like, you have to be the point people for this, to get their Eopies back, which, if you don't remember what an Eopie is, it's that, like, cow llama looking thing that Obi-Wan rides in the Obi-Wan series, mm-hmm. but also in Revenge of the Sith on Tatooine. And they are confronted. I'm dying. They are confronted by Jod, who just comes out of the fucking fog.
Like a god. He literally walks out, like, straight up. I love how they all think that it's gonna be the other clan, too. They're like, they're all prepared.
So scared.
And they're freaking out. And then it's just Jod. And he's like, he very much is like the, hey, everyone.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah, no, I did. It was funny. I did take a screen grab of that and put it on my Instagram story, and I said, I'm really enjoying the plot of Skeleton Crew. And not everyone, there was someone that messaged me, was like, oh my god, it's so much fun, it's like Goonies in space. And I was like, that's not what I meant, but it is.
You said,
Kulis. But yeah. I that's not the plot I was talking about. But yeah, when he showed up, I was like, maybe he is really force sensitive, and he just, like, took them all out with the force. But it was much simpler than that. He was like, nah, I just paid them.
Yeah. Which honestly surprised me a little bit. I wasn't 100% sure what his motivation was, because he had SM-33, and at this point we had already learned that there is something in SM-33's memory bank somewhere that he has information about at Atten. Okay. So, really, Jod probably could have done a memory wipe or something and just left the kids. So that did confuse me a little bit. I was like, why did he go back for the kids? Maybe he is having a change of heart, but I haven't really seen that for me personally yet. That hasn't really, like, mm-hmm. landed. But in any case, he does rescue them and prevent them from having to fight.
My theory for that is that Jod, I would like to think that there's a part of him that, like, he wants the kids to get home, but I also think there's part of him that's like, well, if I show up on Ad-Adden empty-handed, you know, just myself, I might get arrested on the spot, mm-hmm. you know?
But or if I have the kids.
If I come back with the ship the kids were on without the kids, like, they might just fucking shoot me
yeah.
as soon as I walk out. So if he has the kids, I'm thinking that maybe he's like, oh, well, maybe they will reward me for, you know, rescuing them, saving them, or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my theory for what his, like, motives currently are.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I would agree. I also don't think he actually used the credits to get the Eopies.
Really?
I don't think he did. My theory is that he either did something to the other clan, or he just stole them, and he still has the credits so that he can use them later for big money.
That's true. We didn't see them. We didn't see the Hattons after that, so we really don't know what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he would have been able to kill all of them. There's no way. But I do think he did something to get the EOPs and run.
That makes sense. It does seem too simple, because if you think, like, if there are two clans on this desolate planet fighting for resources, what use of, like, credits do they have?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't seem like they didn't establish that there was any, like, cities or towns where they could buy things. Or even, like, a
currency system.
Or currency, yeah. So, that is a good point. I didn't think about that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You might be right.
We'll see. Maybe we'll never find out, but that was my thought. I was like, there's no way.
So that happens, and they get their EOPs back, and then in turn, they are going to bring the kids, or send the kids, to the Fallen Sanctum, which is of similar... The equivalent of the supervisor's tower that's on Atten, which we still don't know much about the supervisor. That's another thing I'm kind of like. I think it's like an AI, like droid fucking system.
Like Fallout?
Truly. Like, yeah, it reminded me of the Loki series as well, where it was about the Time Lords, and it turns out like the Time Lords like was just, or the Wizard of Oz, like a very wizardy of Oz,
yeah,
where it's like, oh, it's this, you know, big entity or whatever, and then it turns out to be not that. But they are brought to that building on at Akron because there are coordinates to other planets in the area, so they're going to look to see if there is the coordinates to Atten. But at Atten, it turns out that at Atten's coordinates had been removed or like scratched off the board that they, or the wall, whatever that they found it on. So this is at this point where we see Fern become very vulnerable in this like strong, take no shit kind of attitude character who's the one who's like figuring stuff out for everybody. And they have, like, a really... Her and Wim have, like, a really sweet moment together.
Yeah.
I love that, too. Because I also was the kid that was like, I have everything together. I did not have everything together.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so, that was very sweet. And very real. Especially when you're a kid, you think that the entire world is on your shoulders. No matter what. Like, as a kid, you're like, I can do everything. And then once you start to learn that you cannot, it's scary. It's really scary. I just loved that.
Yeah, I love that Wim like kind of reassured her, like, no, you're like the coolest person I know, like you're so smart, et cetera, et cetera. And she was like, and I know like I've been in that situation where either it's me that's like, oh, I suck, and like, you know, someone's trying to comfort me and be like, no, you're so smart, talented, whatever. And it's like, no matter what you say, if someone is like feeling a certain way in the moment, it's like nothing's gonna make it feel better. But it was still, like, really nice of him to do. And I like that he's not like, ew, it's just because she's a girl doesn't mean that she can't, like, be the leader.
Yeah.
Especially after they were kind of, like, fighting over being the captain. Because Wim's like, I wanted to be the captain.
Yeah.
But I liked that he was kind of like, nah, I think you should, you know, you're a great captain for this.
And whether or not, I mean, I think that encourages her because that gives her the idea because... she's the captain, so she can control SM-33, so she decides she's gonna override his memory because he seems to have slipped up a little bit and made it seem like he knows something about Atten, and he remembers destroying those coordinates. He was the one who destroyed the coordinates in this supervisor's tower. So she goes over and she overrides his memory and he goes ballistic and tries to kill the children.
I really did love the kind of like play on words that they did to figure it out, where he just keeps it. Like they made it was kind of a bit like a comedy bit throughout the episode where he's like, can't say I remember no Atten. And then it's actually like he literally cannot say. And I love that they called back to the first episode where Fern uses her droid to like override the memory of the systems to be like, oh, you did see me here. And the droid is like, yes, I did see you there. But this one was not quite as nice.
No. I also love, that was the moment where I went, oh, this is definitely directed by the Daniels, because yes, the way the, like, shot following SM33 and, like, the way it was, like, kind of in that, like, zoomed out, like, I don't know, it almost was like just very eye,
kind of,
yeah, like, it was suffocating. Very their style, and I loved it. I was like, this is what I came here for.
Yes, it had like some horror undertones, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think horror in Star Wars would be really cool, even if it's like PG horror.
I agree. Well, hey, just have Kevin Scott write something like for one of the newer eras, or even just have him write something, because he loves spooky, and I would watch anything.
Hell yeah. Give it to the Daniels to direct. Love it.
Oh my god. Kevin Scott and the Daniels. Perfect.
Uh-huh. Perfect combo. Yeah, I would love that. But yeah, that was like actually terrifying. Because he got like, 33 got taller and more like abrasive.
More like a K2 droid. He definitely, the way he lifted up and raised up, I was like, you look like a K2. Because like a lot of his body parts, I think, are definitely K2 style. Yes.
I got that vibe a lot. I remember, I think it was episode two, where 33 like punches somebody. Yeah. And I was like having, you know, war flashbacks to Jedi Survivor.
Yeah. So that was like, as soon as he started standing up, I was like, oh no. I was like, we're done.
And who was there to save the day?
Neil!
If not our sweet little Neil.
I love him so much.
And I just love that he had his little bravery moment of like, he's messing with my friends. I have to save them. And it was just so sweet.
Good.
And then of course 33 turns on the kids to go over to Neil, who is swiftly turned off by Jod. Which I don't know why the shot of him just like jumping and like hitting the button and like falling.
It was
like,
so cool.
It was cool, but also really funny.
Yeah.
It's just like a wide shot.
I know. I love that it's like a wide shot on Neil, showing how small he is, first of all.
Oh, but then
immediately, like, you just see John jumping in the air. It's like, wait.
Yeah. That's like, that is what makes me, like, there are things that he's doing. He's going more out of his way to protect these kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like it's not, it wouldn't be Star Wars without the, like, compassion that the, you know, the adults have for the kids in these types of stories where you have, you know, a reluctant father figure. So I think we're going to see more of that in the later half of the episode of the season. Mm-hmm. So I love it.
I agree. Also, Neil passing out. So funny.
That was so good.
He fainted.
I just love he's just like, you know, his eyes closed.
I know the sound that he makes too.
Relatable. I mean, it was so funny.
We didn't even talk about before they even went up to the tower, the hug that women Neil gave John.
Oh, yeah.
Aww.
I was just thinking so about that. Sweet. That was what made me go, wait, does he actually really like these kids?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, that's really cute.
And he was just like, okay, I'll accept this hug. You know, like, it was cute.
He's like, I'll take it.
Yeah, found family. Hashtag found family. Like, that's such a Star Wars thing, is to have this found family. Because it's clear, like, Wim's dad is busy all the time and doesn't really, like, mm-hmm. entertain a lot of his crazy ideas or imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And Jod has been like, nah, like, I'm gonna let these kids, you know, kind of lead the show, and I'm just here for the ride, because I'll get where I want to go eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So cute.
So does anyone have any crazy theories?
Okay. Yeah, I want to hear your theories.
So, my theory is, I don't know who, I have a few thoughts about who started this whole thing. I think it could have either been, like, High Republic era, or the Empire made these planets, right? Because there was a bunch. They listed off, like, six that they haven't even gone to, or that we don't know anything about yet, that all started with the, like, at whatever. I think that they put all these planets, had them all be almost exactly the same, like exactly the same layout, supervisor tower, the whole thing, and then each one had something different about it. So think like Fallout, Vault-Tec, like every vault is different. At Atten either was the control or has something weird and hinky going on. And then every other planet had something happen where, like, they took over the Supervisor Tower and that's why the war started, or, like, they found out what was going on, whatever. I think that each of them has something different that they were either testing or preparing.
Okay. And that might be why, that might be why there's a barrier on Atten to keep the information away from them, because I could definitely see some sort of uprising on these other planets. It's very, like, Hunger Games.
Yeah, it just feels like everything was, like, very specifically made. Like, why would they have a planet exactly the same with the supervisor tower, the layout being the same, like all of that, without there being a reason? So I think that they're testing something. Someone is trying to test something or like create something, and that's why they did this. That's my thought.
Yeah. Okay. I did see a theory that it's gonna be somehow connected to like Exegol and how Palpatine, you know, got all those fucking huge ships. Like,
yeah.
Like, with what money, you know? Like, how did he build all those?
I like that.
Has not, you know, been explained thus far in canon, I don't think. So, I don't know if I like that. I kind of like... I know that the Mandalorian era is explaining a lot of things that led to Palpatine's return and the things that happened in the sequels. But I would also not hate if this was, like, a totally separate thing.
I agree. I'm enjoying that the show so far has no ties to, even though it takes place in that era, I'm really enjoying that it does not seem to have any ties to anything else that's going on in the universe. I like when Star Wars is new and fresh, and I kind of hope that it stays that way. My only theory right now is that if frankly, I think Meg's theory is probably more likely. But
no, if I'm excited there was for yours.
A treasure of some kind on Atten, I think that whoever originally owned the ship and SM-33 is the supervisor.
I like that.
Yeah. I think you're onto something there.
I like that a lot.
So it may just be an AI. It may just be an AI, but I think like I would even go as far as to say like it could be somebody like Hondo, like some kind of
God. Yeah, like, that ended up just in charge and was like,
yes,
all right, let me do this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I like that.
I mean, we don't know what happened to Hondo between Rebels and this time period, which is like, I don't know, 10 years, a little more than 10.
Maybe he was running this planet.
Yeah, who knows? No, I do like the idea that that is whoever the supervisor is the person who showed up on the ship.
Yeah.
That's a sound theory, I think.
Especially because the ship was so overgrown. Like, there had to have been someone on that ship besides SM-33. Like, who was their captain? Yeah. I've also heard the theory that maybe Wim's dad was the captain, which I don't totally like, but I could see. But he feels too like stick in the mud, do what I my job, and that I feel like he would have said something by now if he was a captain, you know?
Yeah. He also feels too young, because I feel like that ship was buried a long time ago.
Long time.
Yeah, I think maybe both of our theories are right, that the supervisor was set up by whoever showed up on this planet. But maybe the supervisor is actually like an AI droid system. Obviously, like if it's been a long time since this ship landed on the planet, but it makes sense that there is some sort of connectivity here, because why else would the captain tell SM-33 to like hide the coordinates? Like, why would him, a droid who is supposedly on this pirate ship that landed on Atten, like, why is he, you know, why would someone want him to hide the coordinates? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I feel like there is some sort of connection to all of it.
For sure. Good theories. I like these theories.
Cool. Anyone have anything that they are looking forward to or wanting to see in the next couple episodes? I know we talked about like wanting to see Hondo. I had my little Lando theory that mm-hmm. Chris is going to kill me if it doesn't come true.
I think I'm just excited to, because we have what, 3 or 4 more episodes? 4 more episodes? Because mm-hmm. it's 8 episodes. I am hopeful that we will have some answers, but I also kind of hope that there's still some mystery. I would hope that it kind of ends on a note of like, maybe there is more to this, but I hope we get some answers about Atten specifically, and maybe more questions about the other planets as we go.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. I also hope that we follow up with the parents next episode. I agree. To see what their investigation is looking like. I do feel like those two groups of like the kids and the adults, I feel like they're going to converge at the end. Mm-hmm. Because I think the adults are realizing that there's something fishy going on with the lack of information that they're getting. But other than that, I'm just excited for the ride.
Me too. For sure.
For it's sure. been a fun ride so far, and I think it's just getting better. So
yeah. Well, y'all, I think that's it. We talked about episodes 3 and 4, mm-hmm. And next week we will be back talking about episode 5.
Not Christmas episode.
It's just 5. This is our last episode before our last episode of Yap Sesh before the holidays, before Christmas. So if you
celebrate, and Hanukkah,
oh my God. Celebrate. All of the above, or any of the above. I hope you all have amazing holidays. We get the greatest gift on Christmas Eve of a new episode of Skeleton Crew, which I love. Which also means we'll get a new episode on New Year's Eve. So if you don't have any New Year's plans, you're gonna get an episode of Skeleton Crew, and I think that's awesome.
Yes.
I'm very excited for episode 6. I will say, because that one is the one that's directed by Bryce Dallas Howard.
yes,
whose episodes of Star Wars are notoriously like my favorite episodes of.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
She just has an eye that is so good, and I cannot wait.
Love it. But yeah, so happy holidays, and we'll catch y'all next time, and we'll yap with you later.
Bye.
Bye.